Oswald. Let's. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to thank you for attending our first ever Child Status Net webinar on the CSI usage assessment and new guidance on the CSI tool. Before we start with the actual technical presentation, I want to cover a couple troubleshooting issues because we've had, as I mentioned, this is our first ever webinar, and this is our first time using this software, so I want to make sure that everyone understands. If we lose connectivity, which just happened, please re-enter the meeting room by clicking on the webinar link that was originally provided to you. If you have trouble with audio, in the upper right-hand corner under meeting, there is a audio setup wizard that you can check to use and to test your own audio. And if you have questions, you can hover your mouse over a host and choose private chat and send troubleshooting questions. We would ask that you send those to Samita. She's joining us today to help with technical issues. In addition, you can send her an email at the email address listed. We're going to run through the technical presentation, and then at the end, we're going to save our question and answer period for the end. At that point, if you have a question, please click on the raise your hand icon, and you should see a box that says you've been given audio rights. And then if you would go to the icon, the microphone icon at the top left, and click it and make sure you say enable your audio, then you'll be able to speak. If you don't have a microphone, then you can type questions actually into the question and answer box, and then we will I'll be moderating that session. And we'll go through sort of in an orderly way all of the questions. In addition, if you lose connectivity or have a hard time hearing, a recording of the webinar will be made available on the Measure Evaluation website. So as I mentioned, I'm going to go through a presentation of the CSI assessment findings, and then Jennifer Chapman, who's our OVC technical lead at Measure Evaluation, is going to go through the updated CSI guidance. And then at the end, we'll have a question and answer period where Molly Cannon, who is the activity lead on the assessment, and Jennifer Chapman will be available to answer your questions. So starting with the CSI assessment, to give you a little bit of background on this study, the Child Status Index has been around for about 5 years now and was initially, as most of you know, designed for low-literate home visitors to capture children's status across the six PEPFAR domains. Early in the tool's creation, there were hopes that the tool could meet a wide range of information needs. And anecdotally, over the years, we've learned that CSI has been implemented for different purposes, anywhere from case management to program evaluation. We also knew that CSI was used in at least 16 countries, but we didn't have a lot of additional information. So it was determined that we needed to systematically assess how programs are implementing the CSI, and we also wanted to understand if there were additional M&E needs in the field around OVC programs. So the study questions that we looked at are listed below. For what purposes are OVC programs using the CSI? What are the advantages and limitations of the CSI? And what are the unmet M&E needs of OVC programs? To answer these questions, we used a snowball sampling approach, looking for maximum spread across the geographic regions. We selected up to 3 OVC programs per country. We started by identifying key contacts in countries where we knew CSI was being used, and then we asked them to identify the key OVC programs in their country. For data collection, we developed a semi-structured interview guide, and it was translated into French. We conducted 2 cognitive pretest interviews, and 3 interviewers conducted 25 telephone interviews between May and June of 2011. These averaged, they were about an hour, maybe a little bit more. All interviews were recorded, transcribed, and translated. And in addition, we made several attempts to follow up on unanswered questions, and we also did a material gathering. The content analysis was done using InVivo version 8. In terms of limitations, there were challenges with the quality of calls and recordings. We did take excellent notes, and in all cases possible, the interviews were transcribed, but where not possible, we had to rely on our notes and the recordings that were made. In addition, the study by design only spoke to a couple of high-level program staff in each country, meaning we didn't have the opportunity to speak to anyone who actually uses the CSI with children. We were one level up, mostly talking to program officers. So that's important to understand. In terms of findings, as I mentioned, we did 25 organizations, or we spoke with 25 organizations from 13 countries, and then one regional level technical person who's between organizations. Most were program staff. Most interviews were conducted over phone or Skype. Two were in person. And in addition, there were three interviews that we considered partial. We spoke to a mix of programs. Mostly, though, they were large OVC programs, programs like Save the Children, FHI's programs, Pathfinder, CRS. We did, however, speak to a few smaller case management social work programs that had a specific focus area, such as street children. We spoke to one research organization that was actually affiliated with Duke, and we spoke to one government agency. One of the first things we wanted to understand was why people begin to use the CSI and who it is that's promoting the use of CSI. So we found that the USAID missions were a strong promoter of CSI. Internally, often a project would pick up CSI because their larger NGO was using it. In some cases, the government actually is suggesting the CSI use be used. And then there were a few other NGOs or CDC or other colleagues. However, as interesting as it was to understand what was driving the use of CSI, most respondents said that they were looking to get at measuring service measurement beyond services delivered. So beyond how many children they served or how many meals they provided, they wanted to be able to answer the so what question and to get at the quality of their programming, and they thought that CSI would be useful for that. As I mentioned, there's strong government involvement with CSI in a few countries. Nigeria and Rwanda have both adopted CSI as a national tool or their adaptation of CSI. Côte d'Ivoire has highly, and Tanzania have both recommended the CSI. In Ethiopia, it's associated with the standardized service delivery guidelines, and Kenya is rolling out the quality improvement guidelines that are tied to core areas of the CSI. As I mentioned in the beginning, one of our key questions, we wanted to understand how organizations are using the CSI, and we found that they're using it in many ways and in multiple ways per organization. So many organizations use the CSI as a needs assessment and for individual child monitoring and for making decisions about services for children. In addition, organizations talked about either using CSI data for outcome evaluation or wanting to use CSI data for outcome evaluation, for program evaluation, and for performance monitoring. In addition, two organizations were actually using sampling methods when implementing the CSI. So, for example, one organization was using the LQAS method. We wanted to understand who our CSI users are, who is actually implementing the tool. By and large, this is volunteers. They could be community-based volunteers, community health workers, or sometimes teachers serving in a voluntary function. In a few of our organizations, we had paid staff, and in those cases, they were health educators, research staff, or social workers. Nearly all of our respondents indicated that they refer for services. The most common domains were legal, health, and shelter. And formal and informal referral protocols were described, but not substantiated. Some programs use existing community-based committees that review CSI findings and make decisions about service delivery. So this quote, "During monitoring visits, when a child is identified by either a volunteer or a field officer with a need, they look for an alternative way of getting support, either through the community-based committees, through the caregiver, through the volunteer, or through the local organization. If all of the above is not possible, then a referral is made, and a child is referred to a service provider who is able to support that need." After understanding who implements the CSI, we wanted to understand what happens with the data. Volunteers typically collect data on paper forms. The paper forms are submitted to higher levels. 17 of the organizations have created databases. And some respondents talked about how they try to make sure that a paper copy is kept with whoever gathered the data, but in many cases, we couldn't confirm that this actually occurs. And in addition, several respondents described a time lag from when the paper forms are submitted and then when they actually come back to the volunteers. In terms of how the data are analyzed, we found evidence that analysis occurs at the individual, community, and program levels. And examples include aggregating across domains for a child and for all children, and then making decision points based on total possible scores. And a quote will illustrate this better. If looking at the CSI, the highest score is 48, adding all the figures, then the low is 0. Now we have, let's say, adding across all, a score of 35 to 48. That's rather good because the higher the score, the better the child. So in this case, the organization was actually taking the score for each domain and adding it up to get a grand total. And then they would make decision points based on the total possible score. A child who scores from 35 to 48 could be in need, but not urgent like the one who scored from 0 to 17. In addition, we wanted to understand how organizations are training their volunteers or staff to use the CSI, and there is variation, although the majority of organizations use some form of step-down or cascade training. A smaller number self-trained or did sort of an ad hoc informal training, and a few organizations added mentoring typically to the step-down approach. The training time varies from 2 hours to 5 days, and we actually collected a part of our material collection. We asked for training agendas and were able to verify some of this information. The time dedicated to CSI on the agendas ranged from 45 minutes to 3.5 days, and the field work and debriefing time ranged from 2 hours to 1.5 days. We asked our participants what they felt the limitations of training were in their organizations, what maybe their frustrations were around training, and many felt that they had insufficient time for training during the sessions, that refresher trainings weren't they either didn't have the resources to hold them or to hold them as often as they'd like. And staff noticed that data quality was poor after the initial training, meaning that one training with new volunteers often wasn't enough for them to feel like they trusted the quality of the data, but they needed a refresher training. And several discussed challenges with the cascade training approach. Well, it's inevitable, just inevitable. You train people who aren't trainers. The TOT person is supposed to be a good trainer because that's that person's job. But the next level aren't trainers, and they get about half of what you teach them, and then they teach them, and it's about half. So if this is not crystal clear self-explanatory, it's fraught from the beginning. But that's true of everything we do. The cascade approach is very difficult, but we can't think of any other way. In addition, we asked organizations how they had adapted the CSI. We found that it's been translated into at least 15 different languages, and most changes were minor, changes of the picture to be more culturally relevant, or changes of the scale to be simpler. Some removed pictures altogether or simplified the language. There were a few organizations that made larger changes. A few incorporated elements of the CSI into a new or existing tool. We heard about an identification tool, a family needs assessment, and a baseline survey. In addition, a few organizations added questions, in their words, to reduce subjectivity. For example, one organization replaced nutrition and growth domains with the MUAC, which is an underarm circumference measure. And another organization created a questionnaire to accompany the CSI domains. In very few cases, they added, removed, or modified domains. When asked about their challenges for implementing CSI, they reported that the CSI scores are based on different perceptions sometimes. For example, there was challenges in defining what is a 1, what is a 2, what is a 3, and what is a 4. In addition, there were cultural differences. The same situation could have a different meaning to different people based on their cultural perceptions. And several respondents raised the issue of CSI user conflict of interest. Oftentimes, the same volunteer that is administering the CSI is the same volunteer that's giving services to the child, and there's a feeling that if they don't promote, that the CSI scores don't improve, that they themselves as a volunteer are doing a poor job. In addition, there were some questions about the truthfulness of responses, and this was interesting. One organization talked about the fact that in their culture, they worried, and in their situation, they worried that people lied because they wanted more services. And another organization said it's the exact opposite. She said in the country where she lives, people never want to seem like they need help. And so they worry that people aren't honest enough because they don't want to seem like they need more help than they do. In addition, there was challenges about measuring certain domains, especially psychosocial protection came up as difficult domains to measure and to understand. In addition, there was questions about maintaining consistent ratings if the CSI user changes. Some respondents brought up that the subjectivity of data leads to concerns with validity and reliability and how to appropriately analyze and use the data. The fact CSI is subjective makes it very difficult both for people who are administering the questionnaire and program managers. Because of that, in some cases, the reliability of the results places some reservations in all involved. Unfortunately, we still have, I think, some difficulty with actual validity of the tool, and so that has created some difficulty for us to actually take our CSI results and actually use that to solicit other funding or justify changes in funding or justify not having changes in funding. So it's really not at a stage yet where we've been able to use it in that way beyond the individual child level, but that was certainly our intention. A few other challenges, several organizations mentioned that it was time intensive. The symbols may not be culturally relevant or realistic in every setting. And some felt that the CSI is too complicated for volunteers. The extent that we expect caregivers, volunteers to fill out the CSI as part of a case management process, we have to understand that a high percentage of them are low literate or illiterate. The CSI is just still too complicated. And a few organizations mentioned the fact that the CSI doesn't take into account the family. CSI as a tool isn't able to identify needs of other family members and doesn't have room to allow a volunteer and members of the family to share responsibilities by developing a care plan of supporting children and caregivers. So we asked them for suggestions either about how we could improve the CSI or additional M&E resources that they thought would be helpful. Several respondents indicated that they'd like guidance on data analysis. Provide an analysis plan, how to deal with the data. We have received controversial remarks from USAID about aggregating data, but we're doing the best we can. There needs to be consensus on how to do analysis. Several organizations suggested that we expand the scope of CSI to address either the family or the larger community to capture more of what the OVC is pro the program is doing and to get a better understanding of the needs. A few mentioned that we should minimize subjectivity and clarify the purpose. I think it would be very helpful if USAID were to be clear about the limitations of the CSI. I think a lot of people are still under the belief that our donor sees this as a central tool in our service delivery and in our evaluation. Having said that, overwhelmingly, when asked about the advantages of CSI, respondents liked the tool and were happy using it, or their adapted version, and they felt like it was useful despite the limitations. It's a fantastic tool for management, monitoring, and case management. It is extremely helpful. I think it's an awesome tool, and I think it covers all of the spheres that it should cover. And so we asked them how CSI had been helpful. They felt like it was comprehensive, that it allows for monitoring, they can use it for program planning, they appreciated that it was a quantitative tool, and they felt like it provided a framework for OVC services. So, in conclusion, we found that the program staff find the CSI very useful. Variation in the implementation and the data use are due to unclear purpose, maybe unclear guidance, variability in training approaches, and insufficient support or funding for technical assistance or training opportunities. And also that participants need additional tools and guidance to meet their M&E needs. So we made a few recommendations to make changes to the existing documents to clarify the purpose, to develop a communication strategy for CSI, and to develop more guidance and protocols for the data analysis, the case management care plans, the referral protocols, and training. In addition, to develop support networks or opportunity for question and answer led by measure or CSI experts, and to give more guidance around the psychosocial domain. And finally, to make some pictorial modifications for regions outside of sub-Saharan Africa. So now, as I mentioned, we're going to save questions for the end, and Jennifer Chapman is going to share our new CSI guidance, and some of this does come out of what we've learned from the CSI assessment.
Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone can hear me. So as Liz mentioned earlier in her presentation, we've learned a lot about this CSI through 5 years of implementation. Clearly, there's been a number of assessments on CSI usage in the field, and we feel as a community, although We still lack knowledge on the most appropriate uses of the CSI, that we have expert consensus on the most appropriate ways forward. So this guidance outlines core CSI functions and possibly inappropriate uses. Now, importantly, again, the CSI has not been scientifically validated or invalidated for any of these functions. So, importantly, the CSI's core use is at the individual child level versus at the population or aggregate level. So the first core use that we've identified is as a rapport-building function. We think the process of CSI implementation may serve as a rapport-building function at first visit, in that it supports volunteers or service providers to ask introductory questions of a caregiver and child. The CSI may help orient volunteers or service providers to the holistic needs of children. Specifically, the CSI may help volunteers or service providers who are providing services in limited domains, such as psychosocial support, recall that the purpose of their intervention is to improve child well-being overall, and this may encourage referrals where necessary. Through applying the CSI and systematically considering and documenting children's needs, a volunteer or service provider may be enabled to make informed decisions about a child's case management based on their actual needs. In this way, the CSI can act as a case management and decision support tool. For example, the CSI may enable a course of action or intervention for a child through referral for additional services that are not provided directly by a particular program. If the CSI is applied at regular intervals with the same child, data may show a child's progress over time in particular domains. This information may also help volunteers or service providers and others to know when a child is ready to graduate from a particular program. Of course, you should take care in assessing program success in light of CSI data. CSI is one source of data and should be triangulated with other available sources. Also, CSI users are advised to be aware of the multiple factors affecting child well-being, which, of course, includes program interventions, but also includes major life events. For instance, if a child suddenly scores poorly in emotional outcomes compared to their last assessment, this might reflect a change in life status, such as the death of a parent, and not necessarily reflect, for instance, a failure of psychosocial support services. And the message, again, is that multiple sources of information should be triangulated and compared when making decisions about a child's progress. Local CSI data on the proportions of children who score a 1 or a 2 or a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or a 4 in each subdomain may be helpful at the local level for planning and resource allocation decision making. Again, CSI data should not be aggregated between domains among the 12 domains, but within a particular domain used at the local level, this may be helpful for needs assessment. And finally, number 6, CSI assessments may reveal emergency situations among children. A CSI assessment may sometimes reveal that a child or family is in an emergency, for example, a score of 1 in any particular outcome area. However, this is only one source of information and should be used in conjunction with other information to determine problems and responses. Okay, now I'm going to talk about some potential inappropriate CSI uses. And again, our knowledge of how the CSI should and should not be used is limited at this point, but this represents some expert consensus on the way forward. So we think that the CSI is probably inappropriate as a targeting tool. Now, targeting refers to the process of identifying highly vulnerable children and households in a target locality that require external assistance. The CSI may not be appropriate for this because of the length of time required for applying the CSI. The level of engagement required to score a child using the CSI may require expectations for action or for enrollment. Programs might find it easier to have a list of criteria for inclusion in a program, fundamentally the children's needs, rather to then undergo the complex needs assessment process characterized by the CSI process. Further, there's anecdotal evidence that the first set of CSI scores obtained may be less reliable than subsequent test scores or CSI scores, and this makes sense. The rationale behind the CSI is that when a home visitor or when a caregiver gets to know a child and gets to know a family better, that they're more likely to assess that child and that family more appropriately. As targeting only requires a one-time application of a tool, it might be less successful than a series of scores over time. We think the CSI is inappropriate for evaluating the impact of a regional or national program on child well-being. CSI scores should not be aggregated beyond the community level, either across domains or within domains. This is because the CSI requires users to identify children's needs and status relative to their local community and not to international or national standards. Specifically, the CSI should not be used among a sample of children as an evaluation tool. And you all heard Liz talk about how this is happening currently among OVC programs, and so this is something from here forward we are discouraging. CSI assessment outcomes should be treated as 12 independent measures. Scores from an individual child CSI assessment in the 12 outcome indicators should not be combined into a single score. For example, as I said, summing the scores among all 12 domains or even among two subdomains. It is inappropriate to interpret a child's status based on such a combined score. This is because the levels of risk vary across domains and subdomains, and certainly the severity of the risk differ between domains. For example, a poor score in the psychosocial area poses very different risks to a child than a poor score in the education domain. And importantly, we must remember that the CSI scale is not equal interval, but it is ordinal. That means that the difference between a 1 and a 2, and a 2 and a 3 potentially, depending on the context, may not be the same. So we cannot aggregate those scores or those measures. And finally, the use of aggregated CSI scores as a measure for ranking or rating OVC programs, volunteers, partners, and countries is strongly discouraged. So moving forward, some next steps. We will be revising the CSI manual to reflect these changes in guidance around the use of the CSI. And towards the middle end of this year, we will be finalizing a new CSI training manual. We are considering case studies looking at the impact of CSI use on care management decision making to answer the question of whether the CSI is an effective, acceptable job aid. Does it lead to better care decisions among users for children and households? We are exploring the possibility of different mHealth or data management solutions for the CSI. Clearly, there seems to be challenge in the field about retaining CSI scores at the local level where they are most useful. We may consider slight revisions of the CSI record form to improve clarity. This next step we are starting today, which is sharing and learning across our OVC programs. Clearly, there's a lot of dialogue going on in OVC M&E or M&E of community-based programs or community-based information systems, but we understand that cross-country dialogue is lacking and might be useful for people. So we are revamping Child Status Net to be more of an OVC M&E community of practice rather than a CSI-focused community of practice. This will become a forum where we exchange ideas, tools, indicators, and methods, and where we host regular webinars with measure evaluation staff and guest speakers to communicate best practices to the field. We are also developing an OVC program evaluation tool. Clearly, donors and programs alike want to know what the impact of their programs are on child well-being. We also would like to know what the comparative impact of different interventions are on child well-being and household well-being, and what the impact of our programs are across countries. Programs need an easy-to-use standardized tool to support this evaluation process. At the moment, we are developing two tools for use in household surveys. One will be focused on child outcomes, and the other will be focused on caregiver and household, or one's child outcomes and one is caregiver and household outcomes. Many of you have seen a final shortlist of 12 child and 3 caregiver or household impact indicators, which are being pilot tested in a number of OVC program evaluations this spring. And the next step will be to draft the tools and manual, and we're hoping to have a draft of those in the next couple of months for discussion with a wide stakeholder community. And lastly, we'd like to acknowledge the CSI authors, of course, measure evaluation staff who've been part of the earlier study that Liz was sharing the results of, and certainly the USG OVC Technical Working Group, in particular Janet and Gretchen, who've been integral to this process and thinking through new guidance.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Hopefully everyone can hear me. We're going to move into our question and answer period now. And as I mentioned earlier, Molly Cannon and Jen Chapman will be taking your questions. If you could please enter your questions through the question and answer function, or if you do have microphone capabilities, you can speak that way. But remember to go to the top left to your microphone and enable your audio, or otherwise we won't be able to hear you. Does anyone have any questions? One person is raising. Hi, Diana, do you have a question?
Hi, this is Diana. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. I work with the Healthcare Improvement Project, and we use the CSI in several countries, and so all of this information is very helpful. I am wondering what your guidelines are on training and supervision. It looked like there was a very wide range of training, 2 hours to 5 days. So will there be particular guidelines given in the new manual? Thank you.
Thank you. That's a wonderful question. And Jen, I'm hoping that you'll answer that for us.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Diana. At the moment, the CSI standard training is 2 to 3 days, which is what we'll be recommending going forward with the CSI training manual. Clearly, it depends whether there's a TOT element added on to that training or whether it is simply training for community-level workers. 2.5 days is a lot of training for community-level workers to sit through in addition to the OVC care and support training that they are receiving. If the CSI is considered to be more of a case management tool, then those trainings become more integrated. I think the jury is out as to what is absolutely needed to ensure effective use of the tool in care decision making, but at this moment we think that working with the tool in a practical way in training, and in particular the achievement of inter-rater reliability in training at all levels, is needed. And so at least 1 to 2 days would be necessary. Molly, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
This is Molly. No, I don't think I have anything to add. I would just reiterate what Jen is saying, and we're going to be coming out with more specific guidance around training. And in addition, we've proposed an activity to try to look at some different models that gets a little bit beyond how the current cascade training approach is used, because there seems to be a lot of challenges from what participants said when we did the study about how that cascade training approach works. And the perception is that it can really get watered down by the time it reaches the field workers. So that's all I have on that. Thank you. We have two questions from Heidi Reynolds about the specific study. She put those into the chat function. So I'm going to go ahead and read, and these are related to the study. So Jen, I'm going to take this one. Heidi Reynolds says, for programs that were using certain cutoff points, had any of those been validated? Had they done any work to understand that indeed kids with scores that are greater than or less than a certain point were indeed more vulnerable? To answer Heidi's questions, we don't know that. We didn't get that specific information from the study, so we really can't tell if they have validated those or not. And Heidi has a second question. For the programs that were using the CSI to assess child well-being, how did they manage their data so that the CSI scores and results were available to the CSI user over time? You discussed how they aggregated up, but I'm wondering how the frontline user keeps that information over time, assuming that they need that information to make better decisions. Thanks so much, Heidi, for that question. We did indeed ask specifically in the data management section of the interview about what happens when the CSI user actually goes to meet with a child or a family and collects the information. Our sense that, you know, from the data is that what happens, especially in some of these larger OVC programs, is that the information is collected on a form and often handed up to a higher level for aggregation. We asked specifically, is a copy of the actual CSI kept with the CSI user? And we were not able to confirm that that's the case in most instances. There are issues around photocopying, how do they keep a copy of the form. So I think at least 9 or 10 people we spoke to off the top of my head described that is a challenge, that they try to ensure that the CSI user keeps a copy of the CSI. But my sense is that doesn't always happen. And because we weren't able in this part of the study to talk to individual CSI users, we don't know how they record that. So what we were able to find out is that when they don't keep them and the papers are handed up for data entry, that sometimes it can take as much as 6 months for a copy to return to the CSI user. So there are definite opportunities for improvement in that area to ensure that there's adequate follow-up for the CSI user with the individual child. Okay?
Great. Thanks, Molly. Our next question comes from Josh, and I've asked Jen to answer that.
Thanks, Liz. So Josh's question is there a public draft yet of the evaluation tool? And the question is no, there's not. There is a public draft of the 12 child outcome indicators and the 3 caregiver/household outcome indicators that we can share, but the draft tool is not yet available. We are hoping that a draft tool will be available for comment perhaps in March this year. Thanks for your question, Josh. Please stay tuned, and we can post updates in progress on Child Status Net so that everybody's up with the latest of what tools are available. I'm going to keep going because there's a number of questions here that have been assigned to me. So our colleagues at Boston University have asked if USAID or Measure has shared some of the concerns with validity that were highlighted in the evaluation of the validity of the CSI in Malawi. As most of you know, Boston University looked at the validity of the CSI as a targeting tool. I can't speak for what USAID has shared. Measure has not shared the Boston study. Certainly it's been discussed on Child Status Net, and we would welcome further discussion of that study and what it means for CSI use on Child Status Net. But clearly based on that study and others and anecdotal evidence, we are recommending that the CSI is not used as a targeting tool, and certainly it was never promoted for use as a targeting tool. But thanks for your question. There's one more here. From Kara, do you recommend using the CSI as a tool to decide whether a program needs to shift program focus and resources based on the trends between domains aggregated at the program level? For example, if at a program level, i.e. thousands of OBCs are scoring high on psychosocial but low on food insecurity, could that indicate that a program should shift their allocation of resources, or is this analysis the kind that you are discouraging? Thanks, Kara, for your question. This is the type of analysis that we are discouraging. We think that this type of information might be very useful at a local level. The CSI assessments or the CSI scoring is supposed to be relative to the local environment. So as soon as we see a shift in the local environment, say from a rural area to an urban area, or from the north of a country to the south of the country, or even a much smaller geographic variation than that, we should expect different scores and scores that are not comparable. So if aggregation is done within one particular domain, say one of the 12 domains, at that community level, we think that that could be of use for program planning and resource allocation, but we do not recommend aggregation of scores past the local level.
Okay. Jen, there are actually several additional questions.
Okay.
The next one comes, I believe, from Diana, and it's, is Measure working at the country level on issues of sustainability, especially for countries adopting CSI as a national tool?
I'm assuming by sustainability here we mean sustainability of using the tool, or sustainability in training. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but assuming that this is around training, certainly we are hoping, as Molly mentioned, to pilot new training approaches. The current approach cascade training model that is used in most OBC programs, not just for M&E tools or CSI, but for supporting training in care and support for OBC, is challenging and wrought with difficulty, even though that is potentially a more sustainable model. So we are certainly exploring other options to improve training and the sustainability of training at the local level over time. I may have misunderstood that question, so if anybody wants to follow up on that, that would be great. Or Molly or Liz, if you understood better and want to give that a stab, please do so.
Hi, Jen. Diana's actually written in, and she says that that's good. So
great.
And in addition, I think we have a response from the BU team, which I've just sent to you.
BU has said that their study was not an evaluation of the validity of the CSI as a targeting tool. I think we at Measure probably disagree with that statement. I would love to hear more from the BU team about their study, and wonder if potentially that might be an offline discussion or an online child status net discussion where we could share specific findings from the BU study, carrying on from, I know, some of the discussion that started a month or two ago about that. But certainly, I'm not sure who it is at BU, but if you'd like to unmute your line, you're welcome to do so and explain what you're thinking.
Okay, I don't see anyone's hand raised, and Jen, I actually think that's a great idea. I think the BU study and discussions around that and the CSI tool, that might be a wonderful idea for our next webinar or online discussion, so maybe we can talk about that later. And those of you listening, we'd love to hear your feedback if that's a topic that you'd find interesting for our next discussion. After that, it looks like BU is trying to unmute. Okay, make sure you go up to the top left to the microphone and click enable your audio. But in the meantime, they've asked that we refer to the J-AIDS article, which actually there is a link to that available on Child Status Net, I believe. And if not, I'll make sure that that is up today. So anyone listening can review that study for themselves. In addition, Molly, I'd like to add a comment to the discussion.
Hi, thanks everybody. I just wanted to mention, you know, regardless of the focus of the BU study, I think, you know, one of the issues we found in the study that Liz and I worked on was that because of some of the possible inadequate training approaches that are used, there are issues around how scores are assigned for individual children. And even the people we interviewed in some cases themselves noticed that and mentioned that that's a problem about reliability, that they think they could get a different score depending on who is actually administering the CSI. So, you know, in some ways, there are similar things being said about that. What we were able to confirm, you know, in all the 25 organizations with which we spoke to, none of them are using the CSI to actually identify an OVC. Once OVCs are identified through a different process, either defined by the country or the district or whatever they have in place in the various countries, they then use the CSI to assess needs and to monitor children. So I think that that's an important distinction. Going into our study, we weren't really sure the extent to which some programs may be using the CSI to identify or target in OVC, and from what we found, that is not indeed happening. But I think we can all probably agree that there is room for improvement in terms of training methodology, particularly at the local level, relative to cultural context, to ensure that there is inter-rater reliability and that children are being assessed similarly. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Molly. At this time, it doesn't seem that we have any other questions. And in addition, the BU team has written in and are having technical difficulties, so we won't be able to hear from them verbally at this time. But hopefully we can have another discussion about that in the future. Before we end the session today, are there any other questions about either the assessment findings or the new guidance? Okay, we have two people who are typing in questions, so we'll give it just a second. Kara has written in, can you send info about the community of practice and how to join? Absolutely, Kara. We'll do that at the end. I know many of our participants today are members of Child Status Net, but many of you are not. And Joanna has written in saying, due to lack of power, she missed the beginning of the presentation. We will. I can circulate the presentation. I'll post the presentation on Child Status Net this afternoon. And otherwise, I have written back to every participant, so you could write me directly if you're not a member of Child Status Net, and I can send the presentation. In addition, this presentation is being recorded, and as I mentioned at the beginning, will be posted on the Measure Evaluation site with audio recording. It seems as if those are all of our questions. So I'd like to thank everyone for your participation in the presentation. We would love your feedback. If you had any issues, questions, concerns that you weren't able to raise at this point, please feel free to email me separately. And I know most of you have my email address, but it's esnyder@futuresgroup.com. And we will, as I mentioned, have a posting of this on our website. Thank you so much, and have a nice day.